Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Breakthrough the Noise with me, Jennifer Lindsay. I am the Director of Digital Services at Eastwick Communications. Every week we chat with an influencer to see what makes them tick. And today on this lovely Bay Area day, I have the pleasure of speaking with Mark Evans, who's no longer president-elect, but is in fact president of the San Francisco American Marketing Association, as well as managing principal of the Bancroft Research Group, which, and I love speaking with researchers, you know, Mark. So welcome to the program.
Thank you very much, Jennifer. It's great to be here.
So why don't you tell us a little bit, for folks that may not be familiar with you, sort of the two parts to your professional world, you know, kind of what the American Marketing Association does and how you got involved, and a little bit about your role at the Bancroft Research Group.
Sure, absolutely. So the American Marketing Association, just to kind of give you a little bit of background on the association, it's a countrywide association. It's headquartered in Chicago, and it's been around for, I think, close to 100 years. And the San Francisco chapter of the American Marketing Association has been around for over 70 years now. And to put that in perspective, it was around before the Golden Gate Bridge was built and before we had the SFO airport in its current form. So it was a long time ago. And in perspective, we've gone through a variety of different marketing eras, if you will. And so my being involved with the American Marketing Association in this current year, in this current last couple of years, it's very interesting because the entire marketing world has been turned on its head. And so the American Marketing Association is trying to keep up with all the changes that are happening, but what we're finding out is more than being a silo of information, more than being a tight-knit group or community, we're becoming much more open source, if you will. Being much more community-oriented and involved. And so my role coming in as president really kind of transpired over the last couple of years. Just to give you a bit of background on how I got involved with the organization, about 3 or 4 years ago, I started my company, Bancroft Research Group, and as a lot of entrepreneurs know, you have to wear a bunch of hats. And in doing so, I thought, well, networking is a big part of this. And as I went out to the different organizations in the Bay Area, I really enjoyed being part of the AMA, the American Marketing Association. So through volunteering, becoming involved in some of the events that they were putting on, one thing led to another, and I found myself in the role of president, and, which is a great, and I'm lucky to have this opportunity to really drive some of the exciting things that are going on right now in this particular world we're living in.
So do you see your role as somewhat transformative in terms of the organization and in terms of, you know, as you said, there's been a huge shift in the way we communicate from a marketing and communications perspective. Can you tell us, you know, maybe any plans or thoughts that you have taking on such a high-profile role within an organization that's, you know, very well-known, as you said, very well-established in the Bay Area, but, you know, as you alluded to, networking even, and of course, all of the modalities that we use within marketing and communications, you know, kind of, you know, having an online version at the very least, if not transitioning to online. You know, do you have anything that is kind of on your agenda right now or that you hope to bring to the table?
Well, absolutely. And you know, I am a part and parcel of helping drive the change. But what we're really doing is listening to what's happening in our particular community. And one of the things that we've recognized over the past couple of years, at least being in the Bay Area specifically, is that as you're starting to see industry, verticals, categories, topics become much more micro in scope, and meaning that there's many more niche audiences, there's many more opportunities to communicate with your direct community, if you will. And we thought, well, what's going on here is we're becoming much more of a broad organization, talking about more big picture events and ideas happening around marketing. And what we wanted to do was tap into everything that's happening. And we can't do that as one organization. So it's one of the big changes that we're working on going forward is this whole idea of being an open source community and organization. And that means opening ourselves up to everyone else in the Bay Area. And this is a pretty big idea because over the years, everyone's been quite competitive as far as organizations. We're putting on these type of events. We want you to come to our events more than we want you to go to other folks' events. And we thought, well, let's mix it up and start forming partnerships with, quote unquote, our competition or other areas that are in line with what we're doing. And so what we've done is we started to form alliances with other organizations out there and are planning on approaching a variety of other organizations and associations, including like PRSA, Direct Marketing Association, the VC Task Force, an association dedicated for entrepreneurs and VCs. We're just essentially running the gamut and collecting a whole community here that will help us put on a variety of events beyond our particular big niche. And so that's a pretty big idea. And up to this point, we've gotten great feedback. We've started the dialogue. We started the conversation. And if you want an example of our first event we actually had last week that really has started to tap into this theme, I'd be happy to tell you about it. That's in the direction.
I think I got an invite for it. I added myself to your email list. So tell us a little bit about how that event, would that event have happened a year ago?
No, actually, the event that we had that's kind of exploring this whole idea of being open source, we had that last week. And it was really fascinating because it was billed as how tech bloggers are driving the marketing 2.0 revolution.
Mm-hmm.
And so we all understand something's going on here. How is it changing? How do we embrace it? How do we learn from it? And we, as a group and community, we've really been in awe of what the tech bloggers out there are doing in the way of social media and community and getting influence or being influential and building brand out there. And there's a lot of people listening to what they're doing as far as companies and entrepreneurs and marketing folks. And so we thought, what a great idea to bring these two worlds together, the tech community and the marketing community, two worlds that sometimes find themselves opposed in one way or the other or not communicating in one way or the other. So we brought in Robert Scoble, who I'm quite sure your audience knows about. He's an Uber blogger. And we brought in Jeremiah Aoyang of Forrester Research. We brought in Kevin Marks of Google, or I should say formerly of Google, just left last week. And we brought in Mark Silva, Real Branding, a digital marketing agency. And we thought, let's put these guys on a panel or essentially open up a conversation and debate about how tech bloggers are influencing marketing and what we can learn from them. And as kind of this open format would have it, it didn't go exactly as we had planned. It went actually in a better direction. And what happened was a gentleman by the name of, or a blogger by the name of Lewis Gray was there.
He's really well known.
Oh yeah, he's an incredible person and blogger and a thought leader. And he was live blogging the event. And as he was live blogging it, he actually gave the event a different title. And that title was "Who's Driving?" ? Because it became apparent that although these tech bloggers had incredible ideas and what they're doing and how they're building communities, it wasn't necessarily being transferred as actionable intelligence for everyone else out there to start putting into their marketing plans. And what happened was you had all these four individuals fiercely debating about which direction marketing is going, which direction social media is going. And it was absolutely fascinating. And it became apparent that at this point, social media marketing is more about asking questions and debate rather than providing answers to what you can do to create a better marketing or advertising or PR campaign. So it was fascinating.
Right. Yeah, so I mean, one of the things, you know, our firm is dedicated to is actually similar. I was looking at attending the event that you were holding, but we had a conflict. I believe it was the same night as the event we held with Social Media Club on where influence happens. So we had a brand expert in. We had someone from Stanford who's researching this from the law school. We had a blogger from ZDNet on the panel, as well as someone from Get Satisfaction, you know, that whole peer influence piece.
Right.
Somebody who's with one of the many companies that are on the kind of cutting edge of this, which is measuring what's most influential. The company that I'm speaking of is local. They're in Los Altos, called eCarin. But there's, you know, others that many people know of, like Radian 6.
Right.
So, you know, we're trying to, you know, in our strategies and in communications and so, you know, both from, you know, my actual work and the firm side at Eastwick, and also just from a personal level and what we do on the show in terms of talking about sort of where influence happens and how to capture that, we've tried to introduce this sort of scientific or analytic level. And I'm wondering if that was something that came out of the discussion or something that you have discussed in parallel, at SFAMA.
Well, it's interesting because we actually at this point haven't taken really an analytical approach to understanding social media up to now. And I was actually do recall your event, and I was really interested to come in and hear Dominic, I think it is, from eCarin.
Yeah.
Talk about what they're doing, because it is fascinating. At this point, we seem to be more about understanding what it is to be a communicator from a different perspective, not from more of an analytical perspective. But we'd be very interested to know a lot more about that aspect of measuring sentiment and social media and how that affects our conversations. And
right.
And in tandem with that, that's exactly what we're going to be doing going forward as an open source organization, tapping into those narrow niche areas in which folks want to know, or special interest groups, you might call them.
Yeah, we should talk. One of the things that I find so interesting is we've been doing a lot of measuring this week, actually. One of the research projects was for a new business pitch that we ended up winning. The other was for, yay for us, right, in this climate. And then another was for, a client that we've had for a very long time, a very large large brand name. So in looking at those two categories, what we had found was our large brand name client, we've worked with them for a number of years, on different levels of engagement and, you know, have transitioned programs from being more traditional PR to being communications generally to including social media aspects. And I'm, of course, directing social media efforts. So
mm-hmm.
integrating that into all of their programs. And there's been this wonderful commitment to the blogging community, and they've done a great job, and they've worked with Robert Scoble, and they've really hit on something, and we've done trainings with them and worked with them. And so when we went to look at where influence is happening in terms of where people are talking the most about the brand,
mm-hmm.
or about from a product point of view as well as from a brand point of view, we found in both examples, so I bring up the new business example because this is the same, different category entirely, but was mm-hmm. tech-related. Big brand name, also tech, with the consumer and enterprise side to their business. And what we found is the combined, what would you think would be the largest percentage of the pie chart in terms of conversation online?
You mean who's actually doing the talking?
Yeah, who's doing the talking? So therefore kind of, you know, we see these communities sort of self-forming. So where do you think the community would sit? So there's mainstream media, there's blogging, forums, Flickr and picture sharing sites. Where do you think the conversation would sit?
Well, I would think it would be across the spectrum of social networks, everything from Facebook to Twitter to forums to some degree, but I'm interested to know.
So that's the shocking surprise and I didn't mean to put you on the spot. You sound like
no.
a good sport. but the thing that even surprised me was forums. Forums where people were either commenting or posting topics made up roughly 75% of the online conversation for both companies. Different, like I said, different categories, still
right.
tech, was in forums. And for our big brand name client that they've specifically worked within the blogging community. They've put out all kinds of different multimedia. Only about 25% of their activity actually lied in blog land. And if you
really?
Look at like the Forbes.com of the world, what we would consider, you know, our mainstream media hits that everyone cares about, of course, and cannot fall off of our radar, but it actually made up 4% of the conversation. So in terms of mapping that to our activities, we're obviously using this information to make sure that we are, you know, making recommendations about incentivizing community members, kind of some of the things that we hope the social networks that have gotten it right have been
mm-hmm.
doing. But, companies like Bunchball, I've done an interview with them before, and I'm kind of obsessed with their Nitro product. But, you know, the concept that they did, you know, they're working with Comcast Cares and with Dell,
right.
as well as with, you know, the Dunder Mifflin Infinity site, they've created that. So they've done a lot of different things, but the whole idea of incentivizing community to continue to participate so that they kind of can help each other, which gets me to this whole area of peer influence.
Right.
And we see this increased need, and you see sites like Get Satisfaction where people are there helping each other. How much of that has been kind of brought up or discussed, or is that kind of an area that you feel like is still emerging? Or
it's interesting because I said prior to what you just said was that I thought, and it sounds like I'm completely off track here, that forums to a lesser extent would be or are the places that people are having conversations. But I can certainly see that when you bring it down to a particular product or a specific category. But what I'm seeing is a tip of the iceberg. If we all agree that trust is did I fall off the line here?
Just for a second, you dropped out, but you're back with us. So
okay.
You said
so
trust.
If we're
assuming trust is...
is the foundation of influence and how we're building these communities, you know, it's interesting and it makes sense that forums are right there. Now, if we look at another form of this, I would say the tip of the iceberg. There's a particular tool out there that I'm extremely excited about, which is FriendFeed. Ironically, it seems like a lot of folks out there haven't heard of FriendFeed.
Yes, you should find me on FriendFeed.
okay, so you're a believer in the value of FriendFeed?
Yeah, actually, I think that it has different values for different companies. Obviously, it's a microblogging platform
right.
for those that maybe aren't as familiar. So theoretically, it competes with Twitter, but it has other advantages. It's a great aggregator for lots of your, your online activity, including, I think, like your Amazon wish list. I mean, it's incredible the things you can connect with. But go ahead.
I think the key benefit of a service like Twitter FriendFeed is
FriendFeed.
And this is right FriendFeed, which is not something I see so easily done in Twitter, is the fact that you can have threaded conversations. And what I mean by that is it's easy. You have you have aggregation going into one feed, and you can actually have conversations on topics that people are microblogging about. And I mean, not these conversations where you're doing an at so-and-so and here's what I think, but basically in line threaded conversation, which I think is a much more efficient way of building a community, having a conversation, understanding who in that group is an influencer and or where you can learn what's happening. And I just think that that is where perhaps we're seeing, you know, in some fashion, the forum and Twitter coming together. And having said that, there's still endless possibilities for what FriendFeed can do for companies and for folks out there. You can create your own groups. You can have a group that's specifically dedicated to anything from oatmeal cookies to, gosh, I don't know, it could be automotive or the new Camaro, whatever it is. You can actually have a community built around that. And it's just, it, for me, it's taking forums to the next level. I don't know
right.
if you, right.
So, you know, we're big, you know, obviously we have a good stable of B2B and startup clients. And, you know, I am in love with LinkedIn. I think it's, you know, one of those that is rising in popularity. And I feel like their groups function does a lot of the same kind of thing, but it has the capacity to allow people to enable emails. So it has other kind of plugins that make it accessible to different age groups. And also I think,
right.
you know, built into it is that you have a lot of C-levels or decision makers there in terms of influence. Have you looked at all at you know, I mean, have you guys done a comparative look at different, you know, because these are all tools and they're going to change over time as people's business
right.
models change. But have you looked at all at kind of sort of the general patterns in terms of marketing and the way messaging has changed because of these tools? So, for example, you know, questions about, you know, how do we be transparent but efficient and use all of these tools to the max? I mean, are those the kinds of things that you're getting input about, or what are you getting input about in terms of help me navigate?
Yeah, well, it's fascinating because, well, a couple things on that front. An exemplar company, I think, that out there that's getting this right about having conversation and building community and being transparent would be Zappos. I think that they've done an enormous amount of really research, or actually just, I should say, empirical research, getting out there and having the conversation with their customers. And I believe in our panel last week, Robert Scoble was talking about how they require people at Zappos, new employees, to, everyone has to have a Twitter account, and everyone
yeah, and they
has
have a page. They have a page
right.
that shows their pictures, and yeah, I love that about them too. I'm obviously a shoe lover, so I was
so
really excited.
That.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's yeah, it was so it's very exciting. So I think, you know, if you're looking at how to engage, it really comes down to the simple core ideas about building trust and being transparent and listening to your audience. So I don't think there's anything new under the sun. I think it's going to come down to those core values, and the vehicles in which we use to get there are going to change over time, and they're going to become more efficient or more useful, or, you know, we're going to be able to measure much more much better and more accurately. So that's kind of what I'm thinking around that. And then when you bring up LinkedIn, that's very interesting because actually I asked this very question to Steve Patrizzi, he's the VP of sales over at LinkedIn. You know, what are you doing? What are you seeing in the way of your community that's really measurable? What's happening? What do you see in the way of trends, emerging trends? And he said, well, we're really catching on with our groups. And we're trying to figure out how to best grow that area of LinkedIn. And we're just now starting to measure in a meaningful way. So he was basically saying, stay tuned, because we think that we have essentially in tandem what FriendFeed's doing, we can do that on LinkedIn, and as you said, really tap into a lot of that C level, which is so important for B2B. So it's interesting. And then having said that, we invited them to a panel we're doing in August on a very hot topic as well related to this.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that these are all areas where we you know, could kind of get geek out forever. But I want to relate this back to the fact that you have a research background and find out more about Bancroft Research Group and kind of, you know, what you, you know, what the foundation of your work is there and how it kind of, you know, basically informs, you know, where you are with SFAMA.
Sure, sure. So Bancroft Research, in short, is a market intelligence firm. And we started the company in 2005 to really go after the massive problem of information overload. And specifically what we're talking about is folks out there from large companies to small companies that have to do their own research in order to make everyday or specific or strategic business decisions. And we understood and did our research that an enormous amount of time is being wasted looking for information necessary to do your job. And so we thought, hey, there's a possibility that there's a gap to be filled here. And so what we started to learn is that indeed there's just this a massive glut of information and people are overwhelmed and how do you get your arms around it and how do I find a needle in a haystack? And so what we did, instead of starting a company that would be primary research where we'd go out and do our studies, we really believed that there are great sources for that right now, and there continue to be incredible research houses such as IDC and Gartner and Forrester. So we thought we don't want to compete with them. What we want to do is essentially going back to this theme of being open source. We wanted to collect disparate information. We wanted to go out and look at the secondary research market, if you will, look at the different communities, look at the different periodicals, the blogs, the thought leaders, and tap in and filter whatever everything that's being set out there on the web and relate it back to core questions that executives and decision makers are asking. So case in point, big hooray for us, but we signed HP to a contract for one of
Yay.
Our new services.
That's a big fish there. That's great.
No, the sales cycle can be quite long. But what we did is we created a service that's called Feed to Focus, and that's basically what we're doing is creating personalized feeds for each individual in the company or group. So, and the way that we do that, case in point, you have a product manager who's interested in a particular widget or category, and that he or she knows that information exists in some form out of the big research houses and or more intelligence exists in doing searches on Google. But what if you didn't have to do that for yourself? What if you actually had someone that was helping you manage that process? And so what we've done is created these personal feeds that we filter and then synthesize, and then we answer specific questions in what we call dossiers, short-form reports. So you'll have a short-form report, 7 to 10 pages, answering or talking about analyzing a particular business problem or question. And so what we've done is taken the fire hose and really we think we've been able to shrink it down to much more like a garden hose approach, very specific way of getting the information you need to do business.
Yeah, and I think that that's so essential in these times. I know, you know, all of us have, I think, that are doing this sort of influence-based work, you know, have to work with some sort of research arm. Otherwise, like we're talking about, whether it's quantitative or qualitative, to come up with, you know, targeting the right people in the right places, because they're already self-organizing. So, you know,
right.
Not forcing them to go somewhere else, but finding out where they are, which kind of actually brings me to a question along the lines of research. It sounds like you're doing sort of a more personalized version and going deeper than sort of a meltwater type service, in
right.
a sense, right? So it's, you know,
right,
for
yeah.
a particular person, you're taking their characteristics into account. One thing I'm wondering about the sources that you've got coming in, because this is something that we look at all the time in terms of, you know, okay, well, how much, you know, how do you start scoring or giving weight to one kind of media source over another? Is it about the fact that there's, you know, the breadth of it sits in a particular category, or that it goes deeper and is more thoughtful and, you know, maybe more impactful in another area? But one thing that, you know, Blog World last year, one of the most interesting companies that I found, and the name escapes me at the moment, and there may be even more companies than this now, but having gone to Columbia Journalism School and having that background, there's actually a service where they have an editorial team that looks at blog posts if you ask them to and engage with them, and they will
mm-hmm.
actually license your blog posts if they're academic, you know, if they meet the academic standards, to LexisNexis, so that if some,
wow.
you know, reporters reaching, you know, researching in LexisNexis, a blog post, which, you know, great for SEO, great for all these other
sure.
marketing and communications goals, can actually be something that makes you a thought leader based on where the information sits. Is that something that is a challenge, or that it factors in somehow into the work that you're doing on the research side?
You know, it, at this point, it doesn't. What we've done is, as a approach to going out and getting the research, is rather than weighing the research, we have a pretty good filter in understanding who out there is well respected or is a good source, et cetera, but what we do is put the onus on both us as a research team and the owner of that research. And we work together to say, is this the kind of information you're looking for? Is this the type of source you're looking at for this kind of information? And that information becomes much more clear over time. And we like to say, and I don't know if it's exactly answering your question, but what we call our service is a tunable service. So over time, what we do is we have review sessions for each dossier to say, is this the kind of information you're looking for? Do you want us to drill down deeper? Do you want us to go in and find out thought leaders that go in this direction or that direction? And then you bring up stuff like LexisNexis. Our researchers, of course, have access to LexisNexis, as well as their own personal networks, as well as other databases that we subscribe to. And another interesting part of that is that we, again, putting managing information for our subscribers, what we also do is manage subscriptions that they already have. So if they have trusted sources, if they have a subscription to IDC or Gartner or Forrester or Instat, we can manage those particular services as a consultant or contractor for them, so that we're going in and mining information that they already trust.
Do you think, along those lines, that how do you think analysts sit today in terms of influence?
Well, I think analysts and journalists and whatnot, I think everything has been, in a sense, turned on its head from one interesting perspective, in that the tools in which they use and the sources that they have are much more open to the public now. So you're seeing this kind of this convergence of, hey, we have access available to a larger number of people than ever before. And analysts and journalists and reporters in the past have had to really build out this own private network and these silos of information. And now I think what we're seeing is the analysts swimming in the same stream as a lot of us more amateur or tech-oriented or vertical-oriented folks out there that can become our own thought leaders in our own areas. So I think what you're seeing is a lot more competition. So I think the ones that have an incredible value and bring an extra vantage point that you wouldn't normally get are going to stick out. But I think that's also true for the rest of us who have access to the same tools now.
Interesting. So in the course of you know, both sides of the equation here, talking about your presidency at SFAMA as well as your managing director role at Bancroft, How would you define influence? Would you define it differently for your business than you would perhaps for SFAMA, or do you think it comes down to a certain specific phrase that defines what it is?
Well, I mean, influence to me can be summed up in one word, and that's trust. And how do you build out your trust network or your community? And when it comes down to influence, I think a couple of the big changes that have happened over the last few years is that being transparent and being out there as a person that not only is a representative of the company you work for, but as a representative of you. As your own personal brand. So I think influence is becoming much more, if you will, holistic in nature. And how we build that out is really up to more at this point the individual than, say, the brand or the company. And if that comes full circle and you are part and parcel of that, I think that is essentially influence in a nutshell.
So What do you make of, and you talked about some of the folks like Lewis Gray, Robert Scovel, who've done a great job of this, personal brands versus, the brand names of what you would traditionally think of as a company. Do you think that do you think it's harder than it's been in the past for companies to effectively communicate their brand when essentially, most services that they have used have become open to folks that, whether they mean to or not, have basically self-branded or created a brand for themselves?
Well, that was an incredibly interesting topic last week at our event because Robert Scovel and Jeremiah Aoyang and Mark Silva and Kevin Marks were all talking about that. And we actually had this pre-dinner prior to the event. And they were all around the table, and it was interesting to kind of be this fly on the wall, if you will, and watching these folks interact. But they were talking about personal brand, and they were talking about how influence works. And they were talking about specifically Robert Scovel, saying, okay, so Robert Scovel has this larger-than-life personal brand. So wherever he goes, he is Robert Scovel, and he is an advocate for, say, another brand. And case in point, we're talking about Friendfeed, which he's a huge supporter of and fan of. And mm-hmm. So he's essentially a cheerleader for that business. At the same time, he has been hired by Rackspace. And so instead, the interesting thing is, what is the difference between him representing Rackspace and him representing Friendfeed? He's being paid for one and not the other. And so there was this great debate on how does influence work and where's the line between what you're willing to do for your personal brand as opposed to what you're willing to do for the company. Is there a line to be crossed there of shilling, and taking your personal brand and promoting something you're being paid for? You kind of see where I'm going with this? It's an interesting dynamic in that it's a very gray area, and which really came back to, hey, ultimately, and this is kind of, I'm digressing a little bit here, but they were talking about, what do you do with your personal brand? How do you become a business? Specifically, these guys around the table are saying, we're essentially influencers, where we have big personal brands. Well, how do you capitalize on that, and how do you do it in a way that makes sense, and how do you essentially cut and paste yourself? How do you be more placements and at more times? So they were all talking about, well, you need to have a business plan behind you. You need to have Robert Scovel, the company, and you need to start branding that around and do things that are specifically Robert Scovel. And a gentleman by the name of Chris Todd had done a lot of thinking around this and has some great ideas on how to start building out these personal brands as businesses. You can look at Martha Stewart, you can look at, or bring it much more back to what we're talking, you can look at Michael Arrington mm-hmm. as a personal brand and actually a company. He's almost the Michael Arrington company as much as he is TechCrunch. Mm-hmm. And how he actually hired Heather Hardy to be the CEO of Michael Arrington. And so they're discussing among themselves, how do we do this? How do we start to build upon our brand and become more than just representatives of companies or things of that nature, which I think even opens us up to a bigger topic of the direction in which we all are going as our own personal brands, but more so as our own entrepreneurs, our own self-employed, our contract. We're becoming more or less contractors as we go forward. We're not becoming beholden to any one company for any extended period of time. And I think that's a fascinating subject unto itself.
Absolutely. We only have about 4 minutes remaining, and I definitely agree with you. I think that the personal brand issue is huge, but I look at the age groups among which it's huge, and I wonder about the millennials, right? So the basically people born after 1982, and for them, if you look at the iconic Time magazine covers between Gen X and Gen Y. Gen X, this picture of it was very dark. Everybody was wearing black. Everybody's looking away from each other. Everybody's very individual. It wasn't grunge though. It was really about self identity, very serious. Perhaps business-oriented to some degree, but really individualistic. And then looking at the iconic picture of Generation Y, where basically it looks like a dorm room with every kid jumped on top of one another. And you look at some of the trends there where you see that Gen Y is consuming media differently, for example, on, laptops and mobile phones. Or netbooks, or whatever the case may be, they generally are fine with authority. They actually don't really feel the need, in some ways, to self-define so much. They like being part of a crowd, and I wonder if that's going to impact this whole concept of personal branding. And it brings me to sort of my final question, with only a couple minutes remaining, and I'm sorry around the timing, but how much generation plays into some of the discussions that you're having right now? Because I feel like that's one thing that maybe is left out and is a huge piece. A friend of mine wrote Millennial Makeover, and it addresses some of that.
Well, that's a very interesting topic for the SFAMA. Going back again to our theme of being open source, one of the big segments of our organization is the college membership and the folks that are under 30, and this, I have to kind of back up and take a different look at this, in that I have to recognize that I'm part of Gen X, and being part of that generation, we kind of live in our own bubble, and that it's really hard for us to step outside and say, this is really how they do things. You need to step back and let them do it and learn from that, but I'm not necessarily sure how well we can participate in that or design programs that talk to them without having them involved. And so saying that, what we're doing going forward is we're going to be putting on events and special interest groups around the millennials, where they're organizing their own events, topics of interest to them. And we are going to be essentially, I can say that I'm going to be that fly in the wall learning from them. What we want to do is step back and let them get in the playground, if you will, and teach all of us what's happening with that particular generation.
Yeah, I think it's going to be interesting because I'm speaking at an event soon that is is completely targeted to a combination of X and Y. So crossing those two boundaries in one conversation is going to be really interesting. Basically presenting the materials and then hopefully opening up for what I hope will be a very hearty and useful discussion. So we'll have to continue this, Mark. It's been a pleasure to have you on. We only have a few seconds left, and I want to thank you for being a guest and taking time to speak with us. Let's plan to check in real life at some point, huh?
Okay, wonderful. Thank you very much for having me, Jennifer.
Absolutely. We've been delighted to hear more about your activities and efforts, and we'll be watching you with your new open source mentality, which is fantastic. And I want to thank everyone out there who's tuned in to Break Through the Noise with me, Jennifer Lindsay. Next week, our guest is Carmen Schneidel, who is Director of Education, Events, and Multimedia Content for MediaBistro.com. That's 1 week from tomorrow at 12 noon. As always, you can keep up with the latest at blogs.eastwick.com. Have a great long weekend, folks.